everyone, and welcome to Behind the Screams. Today you are hearing my voice. Feels a bit strange to be doing the intro. This is the first time I've done it. Obviously, as we mentioned before, it's International Women's Day on March 8th. So for the month of March, myself and Lindsay are taking over the podcast. And today I'm joined by the rest of the Cackle crew. So we'll start off with Lindsay. Hello, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Good, yeah. Bit nervous, but I'm sure I'll be fine. You'll be fine.
If I can do it, you can do it.
And yours was really good. I love the Ginger Snaps episode, so well done. And we've got Ian as well. Hello, how you doing?
Sup, bitches.
You're loving this month, aren't you?
This is amazing. Just so enjoying. Like, I rewatched the movie again today so that I could take some notes and stuff like that. And I was just so enjoying not having to, like, research all the trivia and do all the ratings and all the social media stuff around it. And I was just, like, sit back, relax, which I'm quite glad for, because I ended up filling my day with, like, 100 other things to do. But yeah. It's fine. But you'll be fine as well. I'll never forget that first time. I can't remember why she did it, but Lindsay just rattled off. That's the thing, right? Because we all intro things in a very different way. We all have our own style of speaking. And Lindsay just, like, verbatim just rattled off my entire intro to the podcast. I can't remember why you did it.
I just wanted to. I just wanted to, because I felt like it.
And, like, bitch, this is how it's done. Okay, yeah, let me much. Take the
risk. She sounded a lot more professional than I do, so.
Anyway, how are you?
I'm good, yeah. I was going to say, long time no speak. We literally just recorded yesterday as well.
I know, it's weird doing this on a Sunday afternoon.
It's usually nighttime.
It was weird yesterday recording on a Saturday, but it's even weirder for us to record on Sunday, because we normally do the Thursday night.
Mm. But I know, I can see you
all as we've said, I might have fucked the schedule a little bit this week. But we've made it.
We've made it work, we have. And as I was mentioning at the start, so it's as we're recording, it's March 7th. So tomorrow is International Women's Day. So for the month of March, like I say, we're focusing on female-fronted movies. And I have to say, but the movies that we've chosen this month, and I don't think we're the only ones that think this, we've heard it from the listeners, they're pretty chef's kiss. Wow, they're so fucking good. We had Ginger Snaps last week, which was brilliant. I really enjoyed that episode.
You're welcome. Carrie.
I know, thank you. We've got Carrie, which is today, which we'll go into in a second. And then next week, Lindsay, it's your choice, isn't it?
Yes.
The Perfection.
Yes, it sure is.
You want to talk a little bit about that before we get into the movie?
It's kind of a hard one to talk about without, like, going into spoiler territory, but I think it's a really good film that talks about a really important issue, and the two leads, Alison Williams and Logan Browning, are just absolutely fantastic in it. I think it's going to be a fun one for us to look into.
Definitely. And then we have other choices as well. We've got Eden Lake, which is Ian's other choice. And then we have my final choice, which is Teeth, which is, it's a movie.
It's definitely a movie. Can I just add, we've also got The Invitation.
Yes,
well.
Sorry, that's true.
Sophie's coming back on the podcast to talk about The Invitation, and I'm looking forward to it. Sophie's great. Yeah.
Yes, we love Sophie. So right, guys, we'll get on to the next little bit of housekeeping. So just all the socials and where you can find us. So we'll start off with the podcast. So you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Behind the Screams. Sorry, Twitter is at Screens Behind. Facebook and Instagram is Behind the Screens. Also Patreon, if you want to support us there for as little as £1, less than a coffee, guys. It's patreon.com/behindthescreams. You can get a variety of perks from £1 tier, £5, £10. You can see our beautiful mugs if you want. I think that's at the £5 tier. But yes, we would really appreciate the support if you're so inclined. And then we have Twitch as well, Behind the Screams, which is Ian, what's the schedule for Twitch? Because I can never remember.
It's it's Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday. I stream Mondays, Wednesdays, and Sundays. Dave streams on a Saturday. A whole variety of horror video games. So like tonight, for example, I know you're not listening to this on the day we're recording, listeners, but tonight I'm doing Man of Medan. Medan? Medan? I can never say
I
it
think
right.
it's Madal. I
Is
don't
it
know, to be
Medan?
honest.
Dave last night streamed Maid of Scare, which was one that I'd not seen before, so I was really excited for that. But we do a whole variety of stuff. You know, we do Dead by Daylight, Outlast, Little Nightmares, Amnesia. There's a whole lot coming up. So exciting times. 7 p.m. It's always 7 p.m. UK time that we start. So come say hi and watch me shit myself repeatedly.
And make Ian shit himself
You
because we
do.
now have sound
We
alerts,
do.
so you can spook him.
You now have the power to make me shit myself. A few people tried it with Dave last night, but Dave's like impervious to jump scares.
Yeah.
Yeah, like someone like big scream will come and he'll just be like, "Yep," yeah. And I'm like,
And you know, it gives me great joy to see you suffer. So, as if spamming the sound alerts.
bitch.
On that note as well, in terms of the rest of the socials, Lindsay, where can people find you?
I'm on all social media at hi, it's Lindsay underscore.
And Ian, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at IanForrest12. I tried a little bit better to be a bit more interactive on my Saturday off because Lindsay, of course, gives me every Saturday off from the podcast Twitter. So I was speaking to a few people on there. So that's at IanForrest12. Don't forget, though, you can find Lindsay on TikTok too.
Oh, yes, we have the TikTok. Lindsay, do you want to speak a little bit about the TikTok and all the plans?
Okay, at the moment we're just doing like horror movie facts over on TikTok, but yeah, we'll see how things go on there as I get my groove with it. Not really got a schedule as such just yet, but yeah, hoping to get some more fun content on there soon.
It should be good. There, you have one video on there at the moment, don't you? Isn't it the trivia from the Exorcist episode that we did? Yeah.
Yeah, hoping to do some more female front-end horror movie stuff on there as well for our Women in Horror Month.
Make sure to follow us on the TikTok then for all the fun things that are planned. If you want to follow me, you can find me on Twitter and Twitch. It's Lulu underscore Pew. I am going back to my schedule because it was a bit mad, but with a variety of other things. But I'm streaming on Mondays when. So yeah, Mondays, Fridays, and Saturdays. I was about to get confused with the behind the screens one there, but yeah, it's Monday, Fridays, and Saturdays, playing a variety of different games. It's very gay. There's lots of cats. It's a fun time over on Twitch.
I
But
love the
yeah.
I love the fact that between the three of us, we've got like the whole week down because we all stream at slightly different
Yeah.
times as well. Even on these days where we're both streaming, like I think you stream slightly earlier than I do.
Yeah.
So like by when you finish, I'm like in full flow. So if people really love us and really just want to spend all their evenings with us, start off with Lucy's streams, and then when she finishes hers, just come to my streams or go to Dave's streams, you know?
And then whilst you're, watching the streams, go on TikTok and watch Lindsay as
Yeah,
well. You know, you
exactly.
just want to see our beautiful faces and hear our beautiful voices.
We are the hardest working people in podcasting. I'm sorry to any other podcasts who's listening to us. We love you all, but you ain't working as hard as us.
Mic drop.
Boom.
Guys, shall we get stuck into this movie then? I think that's all the housekeeping.
Sure.
Yeah? Right. So, the movie that we are covering today is the classic, Stephen King classic, Carrie.
It's the night of the senior prom. The Bates High School gym is alive with excitement. Everybody is there, even Carrie White, the girl no one likes.
We're all sorry about this incident, Cassie.
It's Carrie!
And everyone makes fun of her.
Pray, Carrie! Pray, Carrie!
girl who lives in that creepy house with her crazy mother.
Help the sinning woman see the sin of her days and ways. Show her that if she had remained sinless, the curse of blood would never have come on her.
The girl with the strange power.
If I concentrate hard enough, I can move things.
But tonight, no one will laugh at Carrie.
If you don't have a date for the prom next Friday, would you like to go with me?
She's with the best-looking boy in the senior class.
He's trying to trick me again.
She'll be voted queen of the prom.
You know, I can make sure that you don't hurt Carrie White anymore. Yay!
For Carrie, it will be a dream come true. For everyone else, it will be a nightmare. Carrie. A new film by Brian De Palma. Based on the chilling bestseller. Starring Sissy Spacek, Piper Laurie, and introducing John Travolta in his first motion picture role. If you have a taste for terror, you have a date with Carrie.
Now, this movie was released in 1976, so quite a long time ago. I actually didn't realize how long ago Carrie was made when I chose this. I thought it was actually the 80s. I didn't realize it was the 70s. It's directed by Brian De Palma. It stars Sissy Spacek as Carrie White and then Piper Laurie as Margaret White. And we have the IMDb plot, which is very vague, as they usually are. It's just literally a sentence. But the IMDb plot is as follows. Carrie White, a shy, friendless teenage girl who is sheltered by her domineering religious mother, unleashes her telekinetic powers after being humiliated by her classmates at her senior prom.
I think that's pretty much the movie, you know, right there, isn't it? Like, that's the entire film.
It does when it says on the tin, doesn't it? And, you know, with telekinesis movies, we know it's the thought that counts.
Way, there it is. I was waiting
There's
for
the pun. You don't know how fucking hard it was for me to get a pun for this one. I've spent far too long trying to prep something.
I've just, I've been watching this movie just being like, yeah, because obviously, for those who don't know, my fiance is also called Carrie, so I found this very relatable.
Did you watch it with Carrie?
I didn't watch it specifically for this podcast with Carrie, but she has seen it before as well. So,
yeah. Right. So with that, I think we'll get stuck into the movie. What I wanted to do with this episode, which I won't be doing with teeth because that would be painful, is go through this in chronological order. Now, I don't think we'll go through scene by scene because that would just take up hours and hours and hours, but I kind of want to start off with some of the key scenes, and I really want to get your guys' thoughts on this, especially the start. So right off the bat at the start of the movie, we see Carrie, and we have this volleyball scene, and then we have the gym scene as well. So right off the bat, we don't know who these girls are yet, but we can see that she's that girl that gets bullied. She's very shy, kind of a bit of a wallflower. What did you guys think? I'd be interested to hear what Lindsay thinks as well, because this is your first time watching this. What did you think of this first scene and we'll get into the shower bit as well. Kind of what did you think of it?
I mean, it certainly paints a picture very quickly of Carrie being the girl with no friends who gets bullied by everyone. Like, even with the fact that she's standing in the back corner, like, trying to keep away from everyone, very much paints a picture of, like, this girl has no friends, or this girl doesn't really have anyone. But kind of in general, it's like, it was a game of volleyball in PE. Like, it's not that deep, and a little bitch Chris is telling her to go and eat shit. It's like, fuck off. Like, it was, you know, just a casual game. It's not like it was the game for the, you know, the championship or something. It was PE. Like, he's not that deep.
We all hate Chris, right? Chris is a fucking bitch. Like,
She's the real villain. She's the villain of this movie.
Exactly.
Absolute villain.
I don't even... we'll obviously get into it. I don't even think Carrie's mum is necessarily the villain of this movie as much as Chris is. But I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah, we will. But you know what? I'm in agreement with that. Ian, what did you think of the starting scene?
Yeah, just pretty much what Lindsay said there. You know, it definitely echoes. I want to echo what Lindsay says. It definitely paints that picture. You know, I think we've all talked about our experiences at school and how they weren't always the most pleasant experiences, and I think that's probably putting it rather mildly. So I think we can all relate with that person who just doesn't really want to be involved like Kari does with this volleyball match that's going on. You know, like you say, she's sitting in the corner, and you know, they're all making so many comments just all the time. It's incessant, it's just non-stop. Even while the match is going on, they're going, oh, give it to Kari, she'll fuck it up, you know. Well, they didn't say that, but you know, and then then you know, it's just constant. And then obviously, you know, she misses the ball and loses it, and like Lindsay says, you know, Chris tells her to eat shit, and if that was me, I'd have squared right up to her. But but yeah, and then you go on to the shower. Can I just say, this shower, I forgot about this shower scene. This shower scene was something else.
We need to speak about this.
Yeah, because these are supposed to, I want to talk because, like, obviously everyone in this movie who are playing high school kids, so what are we talking about here, sort of 15-year-olds? 16-year-olds?
I think it's going to be one of my questions, because I'm very confused as to how old they all are. Like, I'm not sure how old you are if you're a senior, because it's mentioned, like, oh, this is the last prom. So are they, like, 17, 18?
But then I don't
that's
know.
An awfully late time to be getting your first period.
Yeah.
So are they 16?
Lucy is on it, though. Look at her. She's researching it already.
Based on the novel, Carrie is 16.
Yeah, so that's what I was wanting to talk about, because I thought that's... They're obviously high school age. There's a lot of nudity in this in this opening scene for a bunch of people who are portraying 16-year-olds. Now, everyone in this movie is aged, I think, 25 and over. Mm-hmm. Sissy Spacek was 27 when they made this movie, which was funny because the teacher, is it Miss Collins, I think her name is?
Yeah,
she's 29, so she's only 2 years older than Sissy Spacek was. And I found that bizarre because she looks much older than Sissy Spacek.
She really
does.
I didn't know that.
But I found that so uncomfortable. I was just watching that and I was like, these are supposed to be kids. These are supposed to be high school kids. I know they're not. But I was just like, wow, that's, you would not get away with that in 2021.
Yeah, like, I was just going to say, like, it's definitely not excusing it, but I think, like, back in the day, it was maybe more like 16 and over was, like, acceptable for nudity. Like, I remember watching this documentary about Page Three Girls, and even in the 2000s, the Daily Star, which is a really, 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 really trashy tabloid in the UK, was doing a countdown of this girl's 16th birthday to reveal her breasts in the paper. And, like, that was when we were in high school. And it was after that the laws were changed, so it was 18 and over only. But, yeah, I think 16 and over nudity has been an acceptable thing for quite some time.
It just...
And it is really uncomfortable because, to me anyway, 16, 17, you're still a kid. I know any 16, 17-year-old listener's probably not going to like that.
Yeah, no, you're right, though. But I remember, I remember being in, what would have been in fourth year when I was 16. And obviously, I can't comment from a female perspective, but... You know, just like sort of knowing the people that was at my school, for example, and just being like, imagine them having all their bits and pieces plastered all over, not just like you're saying, trashy tabloids and things like that, but here in a blockbuster movie that's been being spoken about, what, almost 50 years later.
Like, and the thing with this scene as well that really kind of got to me, because like, the age thing made me incredibly uncomfortable. I think when you do nudity in a movie, there can be ways of doing it where it's not objectifying, but I mean, this goes on and on and on, you know, from the slow-mo scenes of the girls in the locker room to the scene of Carrie actually having a shower. Like, they pan, like, they do slow pans all over them, and it's just it, you can tell it's really just the epitome of the male gaze. Yeah. If somebody, if I had to show somebody an example of the male gaze, that's it there, really,
it's,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's not just girls like getting changed in a changing room.
No, yeah. It's not.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's where the big difference in this lies. I think had that just been the case and there was a boob in the background or whatever, then we probably wouldn't even really be speaking about it. You know, and the fact that it's so objectifying, and the score that's over the top of it as well, it's like some cheap porn. Is that, you know, it's got that fucking sort of porn music over the back of it, that sort of 70s style music, and it's just, it's pretty gross, to be honest with you. Like, it's, I'm not, I think that's definitely going to be some points off for me for that.
Yeah, I feel like if we didn't have this scene, this movie would have been a lot better. I mean, I do overall, spoiler alert, I do like Carrie the movie, but I think if we didn't have this scene, it would have been significantly better. It just feels like it doesn't need to be there. I feel like it was put in just for dramatic effect. And, you know, we're speaking about the era of it, because, like, when I was thinking about this as well, like, Friday the 13th Part 2, we had nudity in that as well, that was, like, these kind of long shots, and it's something of the era, so I don't know, we have to take that into account, but at the same time, like you say, in a 2021 lens, this wouldn't fly at all. So, yeah, I think it's important we need to address that. It just made me feel uncomfortable, honestly. Like, I think it's, like, 10 minutes. Well, not 10 minutes, but it feels close to that. It feels like 10 minutes, that scene, and it's just, yeah, it's unnecessary.
Definitely. You could have shown, like, you could have cut that down. Like, you've got that shot as well of when she gets her period, and, you know, obviously we don't see anything in that shot. You could have literally just had that shot.
See, yeah, like, up until the point where we actually get to Carrie in the shower, because I feel like we're all, the music and specifically Carrie's shower scene is trying to show us is how, like, being in the shower, being by herself, is a really calming moment for her. She is comfortable in her body and she's just having this really, you know, quiet moment to herself in the shower, trying to clean herself. And then all of these moments of calm are often preceding moments where blood is shown, so it's trying to emphasize this like the shock, the panic that she has when she has her first period, and then all the subsequent moments when there's blood in the film. So I don't mind that so much, because it's like tastefully done, but the bit before that, I'm just like, I don't need to see all this fucking 16-year-old bush. Like,
there's a lot of bush
in this movie. It's a bush bonanza.
Can I just ask a question? Just sort of sticking with this sort of whole opening bit, right? And forgive me if this is maybe too personal a question, but did you guys react this hysterically though when you had your first period?
I was a bit scared, but I was lucky in that, well, in some ways it wasn't public, because I grew up poor as fuck. I shared a room with my brother and sister, so I kind of had to share it. Rob, I had to kind of hide it from them, but I didn't have my first period publicly. I think if I did, I probably would have. But there was many times, like, at school, in the UK, most schools have school uniforms, so I always wear black trousers. But in those moments when I realised that I bled through them, because I always had to check, I was like, I need to go home right now. And the school would be, like, trying to get everyone to get me to say it. I'm just like, absolutely not. Like, I've bled through my clothes, even though no one can see it. I want to go home for my nana, like, and that was it. Because it's so embarrassing. You feel fucking disgusting.
You do. I mean? I was the same. My first period wasn't, like, a public thing. And because I had two older sisters as well, I think we mentioned this on Ginger Snaps, like, my mum was just like, oh, for fuck's sake, not this again. I've got another moody bitch in the house. But, no, it wasn't, like, a big thing. But, like, I could imagine if it was, like, public, it would have been really embarrassing. And also, just like I don't know if, like, you've experienced this as well, Lindsay, and I don't know kind of what your perspective would be of it in, like, a boys' changing room, like in secondary school, but when in gym class and, like, in the changing rooms, there was so much anxiety, at least for me anyway. Like, I think we've all said we were really severely bullied, and I felt like in the changing rooms was the epitome of when you'd get comments, and, like, I even still have anxiety now, like, in in gyms as like a 20-something-year-old that I don't know, just a little trauma of people like looking at you and like making comments and stuff. So like that whole environment just kind of has anxiety fueledness in it anyway. Does that make sense?
It's like you're embarrassed to even have like the little spots on your pants, and it's just like even some adult women are just like, oh, what the fuck is that when it comes to discharge? It's like yet another normal healthy thing that sometimes lands in your pants sometimes. It's just like there's in the past even been this culture of other women making you ashamed for having a period, even though it's something that has happened to women for millennia and it's completely normal. So I'm so glad we're kind of getting to a stage now where, you know, we don't have to be afraid of talking about it, or at least in like a lot of social circles I'm in anyway, I don't feel afraid to talk about it. I talk about disgusting aspects of my period on a regular basis to anyone who'll listen. So, you just have to deal with it.
Well, it's kind of funny because like we were mentioned after the Ginger Snaps episode, I literally had the worst fucking cramps of my life, and I think you did as well, and we're in the group like, chat with Ian like, fuck my life.
Like 2 days ago, like I was working from home, I had cramps so bad, I had so much, like I felt nauseous, I was in that much pain, and I was like, I can't work anymore, or do I not? And I kind of wish I did, because it was as much use as a chocolate teapot that day. But it's fucking shit.
I'm sorry, you go, Ian.
I just wanted to get your guys' sort of perspective on that, because obviously I've really not got any, I've got no frame of reference for that reaction that Carrie has in that opening scene. Just to sort of go into the sort of bullying in changing rooms. Changing rooms was never the worst bit for me. Believe it or not, I was quite fit as a sort of high schooler. You know, I was quite in shape, and it was only really in the last sort of 4 years that I've turned into a blob. It was more of the sort of playground and going to and from. I think it was more because of my disability rather than anything else, but it was slightly different for me. But again, obviously boys and girls are very different. But there was always those boys who would just walk around like full of confidence and everything else, and you could definitely tell the difference. There was a huge divide between those who were happy to sort of just walk about and those who were very, very conscious.
Yeah, no, I understand. I completely get where you're coming from there. I suppose this is a bit of a tangent, but like in terms of like the girls' changing rooms and stuff, there were, or at least for me anyway, because like I had an awful experience with being outed at a really young age. There's like so much like lesbophobia in changing rooms, and like if you dare glance at another girl, even if it was not looking at her in that way, like I've seen so much like homophobia in changing rooms where people are calling you like a dyke, or they're calling you this, that. I've had that myself like multiple occasions. So like it's that environment where you feel really vulnerable anyway, because you're getting changed, and if you're a teenager, like I was really uncomfortable with my body, and like having that bullying on top of it, it's just like I really feel for Carrie in this scene. Sorry, that's my little tangent on that. But yeah, we'll get on to the next bit. So we actually get we get to the next part of the scene where Carrie actually gets her period. She's in the shower and she's absolutely hysterical, and at this point we don't know that she doesn't know what a period is, but she hasn't been told anything, because her mother hasn't told her anything. She doesn't have a clue. And then these girls are being absolutely fucking horrific to her, throwing towels at her, telling her to plug it up. What did you guys think of that when you saw that?
I mean, like your heart just goes out to her. I mean, I kind of guess straight away, like, oh crap, like she doesn't know what's happening to her, because even still now, like it still happens. I remember one of my friends telling me that in her first year of uni, she had to show another student the exact same age as her how to put in a tampon, because she had no clue. And it's just like, what fucking school did you go to that you don't know how to deal with your period? What, like, you know, maybe there was no mother on the scene or something, but it's just like, how do you get to go to university and you don't know how to deal with your own menstrual cycle?
I think that's something that
we need
to be like highlighting is in terms of like the education system and that as well, because there are so many kids who maybe don't have whose mum, for whatever reason, isn't there, you know, who maybe they've maybe died, or they're maybe just no longer involved, or whatever reason. And these girls are effectively being left behind in what is, you know, should something that's completely natural, you know? And like you say, that story that you've just told us of this girl who's, what, first year uni, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
So what, 18 years old and doesn't know how to, you know, that's quite shocking when you hear it. But, you know, there's so many reasons potentially for why that is the case. And I think that's definitely something that needs to get highlighted to people at a much younger age. And ultimately, you know, obviously you don't want to go too young with it, but the younger you sort of talk to people about these things and educate people about these things, the more the stigma goes away.
Yeah, well, we were speaking about this in the Ginger Slaps episode, you know, people that have periods, it can happen from any age, but you know, we've known people as young as 11, 12, some people are 16, you know, it really varies. So the younger, I think educating people at a younger level, like primary school level, is really important, and it demystifies it as well, because like if you're not told about it, then it creates that kind of inner shame, I suppose. Like you say, if you don't have a mother on the scene, or maybe it's a kid that doesn't have female friends or whatever, or because they don't talk about it with their friends. So yeah, I mean, the sex education system in the UK is ridiculous anyway, and I don't know about you guys, but we didn't get any education on like periods, or if it was just, this is your menstrual cycle. It wasn't like, this is how you use a pad, this is how you use a tampon, this is how you can, you know, if you're feeling like crap, you've got awful cramps, this is what you should do, this is what PMS is. I got none of that.
Yeah, I feel like in school, I didn't get the same sex education as you guys will have gotten, but I feel like school's very much just treated like a very scientific thing, you know. Like you're saying, this is a menstrual cycle, or this is this and this is that. And they don't actually talk about the real issues that surround things. Talking to people about, you know, like you say, periods, or what to do if you're, you know, caught in a situation and this happens, or, you know, proper practical advice around contraception and all that sorts of things, you know, that's what really needs to be taught at schools, and I don't feel like any of that is.
Preach. Hopefully we get it.
On top of that, and to take it off into a tangent slightly away from vaginas and penises, how fucking shitty is this head teacher? What a dick!
Oh, he's such an arse.
Oh, there needs to be a bloody inspection in this school. Like, seriously, this gym teacher smacking lasses left, right, and centre.
So much slapping.
And she's like the nice one. She's the nice one.
She fucking at the end hauls Sue out, practically by the bloody hair, and flings her out the gym.
And we get the scene with you know, Mrs. Collins, the gym teacher, like comforting Carrie, and then we get the scene with the principal, and the principal, just like in Ginger Snaps, doesn't have a fucking clue. You know, the first thing he says is like, oh, is she not a bit old to be getting her first period or something like that?
The thing is as well with that, it doesn't really matter whether it's her first period or not in this case.
Yeah.
She's had an incident with her period, so it could have been her first, it could have been her fucking 50th, it didn't matter. Like, and there was also, sorry Lindsay, I cut you off twice. There's that fucking scene as well, because obviously Miss Collins has got like a little bit of blood on her shorts.
That's exactly what I was going
to
bring.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then he's like fucking side-eyeing it as if to say, oh my god, get this fucking shit away from me. And it's just
like, I know, he looks so disgusted, but I bet if that was like blood from a fight, like if someone got a bloody nose, he wouldn't have cared.
Yeah. You're exactly right, and at the end of the day, blood is blood. And you know what, they kind of like, especially at the start, I just feel like they are so unsympathetic towards her. Like, she's gone through something incredibly traumatic, and you know, they're just like, oh, you know, just go home, it's, you know, it's all right. And he keeps calling her Cassie as well, and you can see Carrie is,
winds me up so much. It's just the height of fucking rudeness. He's corrected, what, 3 or 4 times, and he still does it.
It's not a hard name to remember.
I know.
You know, and it's one of his students, and I'm assuming not one of his new students either. They're in their last year of school, and when we get later on, everyone seems to be aware, I think it's the next scene where Carrie's mum goes round to like Sue's mum's house, and so everyone is like aware of how weird, you know, the family is. So it's not like they're new people to like the neighbourhood, and he's not going to know her name. He's just been a fucking wank.
He is, and you can see Carrie like slowly starting to get really, really pissed off. And in that scene, and I think, yeah, we have the light bulb in the scene before, we're starting to get hints of her telekinesis powers and how they're triggered, you know, by her emotions, and completely understand that. I think she flips like the ashtray or something. And I was just kind of like, yeah, you go, sis, because he's being a fucking arse, so just walk out of there.
Another example of an ashtray where it shouldn't be. Remember in Exorcist when they're all fucking smoking in the doctor's office? And here they are in the head teacher's room. I mean, what were they thinking in the 70s?
They're telling kids not to smoke, and they're smoking up in their bloody offices.
The head teacher had a fucking pipe. Did you see that? Because it's only Mrs. Collins that's smoking, but when he's like trying to write out like the absence slip or whatever it is, there's a fucking pipe just sitting on his desk.
I didn't even notice that. The teachers in this movie, just kind of like we've talked about police officers and other horror movies, they're just imbeciles in a nutshell, really. But we'll move on. So we get the next scene. We're introduced, kind of like you said, Ian, to Margaret White, which is Carrie's mum. She goes over to Sue Snell's mum's house. And this is where she's trying to get donations to the church.
I don't know if she's trying to get donations
because when Sue Snell's mum kind of gives her $10 to kind of get her out the house, she looks very disappointed. So I don't know if she's trying to like recruit her to the church or something rather than getting money.
I pretty much exactly what I was away to say there, because she's fucking like, oh, when, you know, she gets the $10 and...
Her nose is right out of joint.
I know. So, yeah, I think she's more going around on a sort of recruiting mission rather than a money drive. But she's, you know, she's around there preaching the word of the Lord, and, you know, I'm sure this is going to be another opportunity for me to just have a rant about religion, so it's fine.
Her Mrs. Snell trying to enjoy her GMT in her daytime telly.
Ah, she was watching her soaps. She was pure loving life, wasn't she?
I
want to
be hard when I grow up.
Honestly, same. Kind of goals, right?
I already am.
But after that scene, I think this is the first scene that we get Margaret and Carrie together, and you can already see the power dynamic. So, I mean, what do you guys think of Margaret? I mean, she's from the get-go, you know, she's slapping Carrie, she's reading, I think one of the sections is called The Sins of a Woman, because Carrie's got on her period and she sees her as a basically disgusting beast. Really. What do you guys think, like, what's your first impressions of Margaret and like her relationship with Carrie?
I mean, part of me feels sorry for her that she is this like self-hating woman. There's so much in religion, like even going back to like Greek mythology, like women were created as a punishment for men, and she really sees herself as that, and she sees Carrie particularly as that, because she's a young pretty girl, as something here to corrupt the world, and she's basically using like her first period against her, being like, oh, now you're able to tempt all these men, and now you're gonna commit all this sin, and saying that she has sinned just because she's had a period, and it's not really her fault. So I feel sorry for Margaret White in that way, that she doesn't understand like the power and the beauty in being a woman. She just thinks it's this horrible, horrible thing because she's picking out all these like horrible points about her religion to justify being a self-hating woman. It's actually really sad.
It is, yeah. But Ian, what did you think?
Yeah, I was the same. Obviously, when you first watch this, later in the movie is when I really started sort of feeling a little bit sorry for is it Margaret White? I just called her Mrs. White in all my notes. But yeah, it's later in the movie that I really sort of do start to feel a little bit bad for her. However, none of that actually excuses what the fuck she does, because she's horrendous. to Carrie. You know, she locks her in a fucking cupboard. You know, she's slapping her. She's making her feel horrendous about her own body. You know, and like Lindsay said, she's using all these sorts of worst parts of her religion to make her feel like this. You know, using religion to justify her bad behavior, which is something that I'm very passionately against, you know. So, yeah, I find her character very difficult because I feel like a lot of people do see her as being one of the big villains of this movie, and I'm not 100% sure that's really the case, because obviously later on we find out that she was abandoned by her husband who ran off with another girl. And I think that, you know, she's read the wrong things from these situations. You know, she's seen it as, oh, she was... her husband was tempted away, and then she goes on about all this about, you know, what happened when she became pregnant and all that. And I think she reads the wrong things into the situation she's in. Obviously, like I say, not justifying her behaviour, but I feel like that's really unfortunate and quite sad, really.
Yeah, I completely understand where you're both coming from. I think, you know, it doesn't justify what she does to Carrie, because, I mean, what, you know, the physical and the emotional abuse that she puts Carrie through is unacceptable. But you can see where it stems from. As you mentioned, we do find out later on that her husband leaves her. You know, I think Carrie was conceived out of wedlock as well. They talk about that, and she has such guilt and shame around that. I think we do get a bit of more of a backstory in the remake as well, which we can talk a little bit about later on. But it doesn't make it right, but you can kind of see her thought process. She clearly has a lot of trauma there, and maybe the church was her way of finding community and her way of trying to forgive herself. Like, she obviously feels awful about herself, and she's taking that out on Carrie. She doesn't want Carrie to become hurt, but she's taking it to the extreme degree. And yeah, seeing everything as a sin. She's seeing her blossoming, becoming a woman, and she's terrified that she's probably going to go in the same fate as she is, if that makes sense.
This is my PSA to the world. So if you've got trauma in your life, don't turn to the church. Go to fucking therapy.
Everyone should go to therapy.
Don't go to the fucking church. Because the church at the end of the... Here I go. The church at the end of the day is a for-profit organisation. They will do whatever it takes to convert you for profit. Sorry.
Mic drop. No, that's fair. You know, like I said, everyone should go to therapy. If you take anything from this, everyone, go to fucking therapy.
even if you think you're well, go to therapy.
Exactly. And also, like, I wanted to see if you guys thought this as well. So we have the scenes where she keeps putting her, like, in, it's like a little cupboard closet where she tells Carrie to go pray. That really reminded me of the chokey in Matilda. Did you guys get that as well?
Yeah, very much so. I actually have it in my notes. Can I just say as well, but that scene, that fucking Jesus doll was a creepy motherfucker with those glowing eyes. Yeah. Like, that would be getting chucked straight out the window.
Terrifying. Just, yeah.
You, it's got some moody vibes. You don't look to
that for, like, moments of peace. Like, what's your nightmares?
Oh, it was really creepy. Yeah, that, I wouldn't want that in my house. A recipe for disaster. But then we get onto the scenes afterwards. So we get the scene with Miss Colin and the girls, and she's punishing them for what they did, you know, bullying Carrie and throwing the towels at her in the shower scene. And, you know, she says that they would have had their prom tickets taken away, but something to do with the administration, that only get a week detention, which is fucking ridiculous. I was absolutely raging at that. I don't know if you guys were, for what they put her through. Like, no, it's not enough.
It almost felt like their detention. It's like, also, the week leading up to prom, they get 5 fitness
classes.
So they get nice and toned for their, to get on their,
that was it.
They're doing them a bloody favour.
The punishment was beneficial for them. And as well, the other thing that I found bizarre about it is this it goes back to the opening scene. They're obviously all relatively good at like PE and sports, because they're all playing and they're making fun of Kari for not being good. So you're giving them something that they're good at that's going to make them look and feel better. You know, I'd have given them like back-to-back maths for like 54 hours or something, you know, something that they're really going to fucking hate. Don't give them fucking PE.
I'd never thought about it like that, but they basically got free PT sessions before prom, you're right.
Apart from the one, they got a slap.
Was it Chris? Oh, that slap, so satisfying though. Like, it wasn't just, like, it's not right, but did you guys kind of go, yeah?
Yeah, like, the power dynamic, obviously, between the teacher and the student is like, oh, but does Chris deserve a slap? Yes. From Miss Collins. Just not from Miss Collins.
From Kari. She deserves a slap from Kari.
Yes. Yes. She did. So we'll kind of move on from that scene, because I know we've still got quite a lot to cover. So we get the scenes with Chris and her boyfriend. Is it Tommy?
Billy.
No, it's Billy. It's Billy, who's played by John Travolta!
It's so weird, because obviously this is before Grease, because he came out 2 years later.
2 years.
So, yeah, it's a weird scene now, because he's probably like one of the most famous people in this film now, but obviously back then he would have been completely unknown.
He's so sleazy and creepy in this film as well. He's a head pusher. He slaps her twice. Does he slap her twice?
Yeah, he does.
He slaps her twice. And
their relationship is so fucking toxic. Like, she's awful because she's like keeps berating him and insulting him, and she obviously uses like sex as a weapon, but then he literally, instead of just pulling the car over and be like, get the fuck out, he smacks her. And it's like they're both like so disgusting, toxic people. Like, they just egg each other on throughout their whole stupid little plan throughout this whole film. Like, I absolutely hate them both.
Can I just say as well, most awkward blowjob in a cinema, in film. Oh my god.
She's a very talented ventriloquist, by the way, because the fact that I can say that so
the
clearly.
Fucking lines that she was speaking while she was going, this guy's
so I've
fucking
never done that before.
Oh no. But yeah, like I was watching that and I was just like, it was so fucking awkward because she just kept repeating his name as well. And I was just like, oh.
And she's, when she's saying it as well, she's acting as if she's getting, sorry, this is a tangent, she's getting so much pleasure out of it. And I'm like, he's doing nothing for you, babes. Why are you trying to like,
yeah, nah. She's like pretending that she's, you know, about to fucking go over the horizon there, you know, and she's reaching the point of no return, and it's like, I don't think so, hen.
And but then yeah, she that knows, I hate
Kari. Yeah, that's it! That's yeah. It! If I was me,
what
if I was
boner killer.
If I was Billy, I'd be like, okay. What? Cheers, hen.
But yeah, that relationship is so toxic, and the other kind of the thing that I don't like about this movie, and I am going to fault it for, is like this casual violence between them. The movie doesn't really address it. Like, you know, it when he slaps her, it's so casual. There's no like dramatic, like, oh my god, that was wrong. I know we have the comeuppance in the end for all of them, but the way that they show that, it's like the way it's shot, the way it's edited, it's as if it's not a big deal. And that, like, that did not sit right with me.
It was, well, like, how many fucking times does Chris actually get slapped in this film? Because it's not just Billy, it's Mrs. Collins as well. Mrs. Collins gets a couple of good hits in on her, and Billy gets a couple of slaps in on her. Like, everyone's just fucking wailing on this wee lassie.
I mean, I don't want to, like, create empathy for Chris, but it's like, you know that way that bullies are often got, like, shit going on at home, so they use bullying as a way to feel powerful and stuff. It's just, like, it does make me wonder, like, what goes on in her life that she just lets this guy slap her.
Well, yeah, because we don't get her sort of backstory, because it's Sue's sort of home life that we get to see. It's not Chris's, so we don't actually know what's going on in her home. So, you know, if I was to look at it, and obviously not knowing anything, you would probably put money on that there's something going on to her in her home life.
Yeah, that's I completely agree with you. Like, I do think that, you know, Chris is the real villain in this at the end of the day, but at the same time, there is obviously stuff going on in her home life. She's been treated awful by pretty much, you know, all the people that we see in her life anyway. Does it justify what she did? No, the same as Carrie's mum, but you can kind of see why she is the way she is, because maybe she's just grown up with violence and she kind of sees that as the norm. And what she does to Carrie, which we'll get to near the, you know, as we go on, maybe like she's numb and like desensitized to that kind of thing because that's all she's ever experienced. So
there's literally zero moments of clarity where she's like, oh, maybe I'm taking this too far. She never
No. When she's receiving it, you know, when Billy's slapping her as well, that's like there's no phasing her really in the slightest. She's not at all. So I think both of those things speak to that.
And then we get the plan. So Chris is using Billy to her devices, you know, like I said, using her sexuality and using her relationship with him to basically get back at Carrie for being punished, you know, by Mrs. Collins, and getting her prom tickets taken away because she refused to take part in the exercise, exercise detention punishment. So they go and they get a pig. We see that awful bloody scene where he's throttling this pig. What do you guys think of
so
all that?
So fucked up. Just in a way she's like screaming with like absolute joy as well, as he is, what I'm assuming, pounding a fucking pig's head in with a sledgehammer. It's like, what the fuck is this? Like, you just think the two of them, there's something so seriously wrong with them. That's what, like, I think for both of them, I think there's probably some horrible shit going on at home that they think it's their behaviour towards each other is acceptable, and then this plan that they're doing, this thing that they do to this innocent animal is acceptable as well. They're just, the pair of them are completely unhinged. Like,
it makes me kind of miss my own bullies, because, like, nothing now. You know, like, though, it's 16-year-old, you were tipping people up in corridors and fucking...
Yeah.
Putting stink bombs in their school bags and that, like, and that was about as bad as it got. And I'm not belittling anyone's bullying experience, but this is taking it to the extreme.
Yeah,
like, this is horrendously bad. Not only are they just being awful, so awful, beyond reprehensible, I mean, this is bordering on, well, this is a criminal. They're performing criminal activities, and they're killing a poor fucking innocent pig, and pigs are, like, the nicest animals anyway. Like,
what did that pig do to them, you know?
Pigs are so cute.
They are. Yeah. I like pigs. But on the flip side of that, so we have these scenes with Billy and Chris kind of, you know, planning to sabotage Carrie, and on the other side of it, we have Sue and Tommy. So Tommy is trying to convince Carrie to go to the prom. What did you think of the intentions of this? Because I know, like, later on, we can kind of see that Sue feels bad because she obviously joins in with the heckling and the bullying, but you can kind of see that she maybe also feels for Carrie as well.
Up until, like, the very end, obviously not rewatching it today, but the first time I watched it, up until pretty near the end of the movie, I just thought they were in on it.
Yeah.
I thought they were in on everything, and obviously we find out at the end they're not in on it. So up until, you know, that last couple of scenes, I'm very much like, oh, fuck these two, they're part of the prank. And then obviously we find out that they're not. So I actually kind of liked that twist as well, because Tommy's being really nice to Carrie. And I have issues simply with the fact that Tommy has asked Carrie to prom, and we'll get into that, I'm sure, in a little bit. But Tommy is being really nice to Carrie, even though he's been asked to take her to prom. You know, he's making her feel really good about herself, and he's given her these nice moments. And so I found that I kind of liked the fact that them two weren't actually in on it.
Yeah, it's nice to have, because I was the same as you, especially on a first watch. You immediately think that they're in on it, and that, you know, Tommy's just being nice because he's trying to convince Carrie to go to the prom, and there's all this malice behind it. But, in, you know, at the end, we actually find out, you know, that's not the case. But kind of those scenes where Sue's trying to convince him to take her to prom, and then we have the scene where he's at the house and he's, you know, trying to convince her. Lindsay, what did you think of kind of this part?
I totally didn't blame Carrie for just like running away at first, because I think when you're somebody like Carrie who's been bullied so much, and then you've got a mother at home that's just like telling you that you're worthless pretty much all the time, then of course you're not going to accept the prom invitation from the, you know, most popular boy in school.
I'd have run away from him just for the perm, to be honest. That fucking perm, oh my god, sorry to interrupt, but Jesus
Christ. It's kind of criminal, right?
That is...
I don't know, I loved it.
Oh, did you?
Oh, you were here for it.
you can get one for the next podcast then.
I just couldn't pull off curls, my face is too round as it is.
There's no chance of me getting one with the fucking little hair that I have left. So.
It's growing back. Told you it would.
Yeah.
Very slowly. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
I get where you're coming from there. Like, because I mean, throughout, well, what we assume throughout Carrie's whole life, she's been bullied by her fellow students, her mom, everyone. Of course, she's going to be terrified and have doubts that this is legitimate. I know I would be. As well, but then we get the scenes where, you know, she does accept and she's getting ready to go to the prom. There's all this kind of prep that they're doing, you know, she gets makeup, she gets her dress, and then we get the scene with her mum, and this is a real shift in the power dynamic. You know, her mum is like quite literally like begging her to stay, and Carrie is starting to stick up for herself and be like, actually no, fuck you, I'm gonna do what I want. It's not a sin for me to, you know, put on makeup and wear a dress and go out and have a good time. What did you guys think of this? Because she really is kind of, the mum's quite vulnerable at this point. You can see that in reality, she actually needs Carrie more than Carrie needs her.
Yeah, like Carrie shows so much maturity in that scene where she's getting ready for prom and like her mum is using like euphemisms for breasts and she's just like, they're breasts, everyone has them. And she's taken a really, like, logical approach to things, compared with her mum's, like, very emotional outburst with the whole thing. Like, oh, let's, she's, like, begging for her to stay. Like, oh, let's just, like, throw this thing in the fire and pray, which sounds so crazy. And, like, even the way she calls it a red dress, and obviously, like, there's so much symbolism with colours in this film, and red is always associated with, like, the devil and bad things. So even the fact that she calls her pink dress, which pink at the end of the day is just, like, a very light form of red, she calls this pink dress red. I'm trying to be like, this whole night is the devil, please don't go. It's just, yeah, I think it's really well done, and I think... Yeah, Carrie shows like so much maturity in it. Like you really feel for her, and you're just like, just want her to go out and have a good time. And you kind of, you like, I felt like I liked this moment between them anyway, because I feel like Carrie had the upper hand in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you feel like you're backing her up. Like, yeah, like I was just thinking that you go, Glenn Coco, you go, Carrie. Oh, can we address though that? Yeah, the mum calls her tits dirty pillows.
I have not heard that phrase since, like, I watched Austin Powers, and like, that was a really long time ago.
I've never heard it called that. I didn't even remember it in Austin Powers. I was like, yeah. I don't even understand the fucking correlation.
I know.
It's
Ian, what do you think?
It's, it shows the desperation, really, doesn't it, of our mother. You know, like, yeah, you said, we were talking about her calling it the red dress. Well, I know when I saw this scene for the first time, I didn't go, oh, that's a red dress. Because it's not fucking... I know what you're saying, you know, pink's a light shade of red. It is. But, you know, like, you look at that dress and you go, oh, that's a pink dress. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it just shows the desperation. And I agree with you, you know, about Carrie showing that level of maturity. Because her mum's, like, fucking groveling at her legs, grabbing her and everything. And she's just, like, pushing her away. But doing so in a way that's not non-violent, you know, like she could easily turn around and give her mum a slap at this point, or, you know, do whatever, because that's what she knows as well. That's what she sees. She's been treated so badly. Her mum fucking threw her pot tea over her at one point as well, like full fucking right in the face as well. I must give Mrs. White some credit. That was a shot and a half, because she got the hail fucking thing right over her. But, you know, so... she does show that level of maturity, and the whole power just shifts at this point, because up until this point it's been Margaret that's had all the control and all the power, and it's not even just like a minor shift as well, it completely changes, and suddenly she has nothing. She has no control, she has no power. Suddenly Carrie is the one who is in control and has all the power.
Exactly, because, you know, for before this, we don't see anyone else interact with them. We kind of are made to assume that, you know, when Margaret's husband left, all that was left was her and Carrie was all she had. And, you know, even like in the house, it feels like a prison, you know, and we have all the it's very dark. We have the religious kind of murals and everything all over the place. And it feels like she's in prison, Carrie. I think Carrie's room's like in the attic as well. So she's kind of kept away, hidden away. And it's her only form of control. So when she's losing that, she's losing herself. But yeah, Carrie's like, bye, Felicia. Mm-hmm. I'm going to the prom and I'm going to dance my ass off.
They live in this giant fucking house and she lives away up in the dusty attic as well. Like, there's what's fucking Mrs. White doing with the rest of this house?
I know. What's going on there?
All our fucking Jesus shrines, you know?
Oh yeah, there's like can we talk about that? The dinner table. There is the massive like shrine above the dinner table, isn't there? Or is it like a rug thing or something? Like,
yeah, because it looks like it's like a tapestry over a window as well. And I was just like, why would you do that? But maybe like she just wanted to keep the house like really dark from like people looking in and like just have our secret little world just her and Carrie. But yeah, I thought that was very strange.
So then we get to the actual prom, and we have a couple of like nice scenes to start off with Carrie and Tommy, and then Mrs. Collins sits down with her as well and says how pretty she looks and kind of talks about, oh, back in my day, which feels kind of weird now knowing she's 29 and she's only like 3 years younger. But yeah, and we have the scene where they have the dance and then they have the kiss, and then we see the votes being hijacked for prom king and queen. So I think it's Norma, which is like one of Chris's friends, like swaps the ballots or something. So guaranteeing that Tommy and Carrie are prom king and queen. And then we just get into the madness of kind of what happens before we get the scene that like everyone knows, with the pig's blood falling down on Carrie. Kind of, I actually quite like the lead up to this, like in terms of the score and the way it's shot. I think the build up is done really well. What did you guys think of it?
I think like actually like extra credit needs to be given for the way this whole prom scene is shot, because things like film cranes weren't around back then. So yeah, so much work had to go into setting it up. Like the whole one shot when it goes from like Carrie and Tommy at the table to like Billy and Chris under the stage to the bucket of pig's blood and stuff, like that took an entire day to film to make sure they got it all correctly done in one shot. And even like the dance scene just before this, I was watching an interview with the director of photography from the film, and of course there was no like rigs again for it, so the cameraman just had to like increasingly move faster around Tommy and Carrie, and they got so much speed up at the end that they were just absolutely fucked afterwards, and they just collapsed.
So, oh my god,
I think like a lot of extra credit needs to go into the way things were filmed, because like these people worked really really hard to give us these really cool shots.
Getting their cardio in.
Definitely.
Ian, what did you think of these scenes before the...
I mean, first thing, like, there's a few things that I want to point out about this, but like, first thing is I kind of forgot how early in the movie this scene actually starts. Because when this scene's, like, everyone knows the famous scene, you know, when the pig's blood scene happens. And you assume, you know, that's kind of like the big finale, and it is. But this scene starts like with still, I looked at the timer, it's like 45 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And they're all just sort of arriving at prom, and I was like, oh, like, is there stuff I'm forgetting about or not? But they feel like, it's one of the things I actually quite like about this whole film is that it goes past really quickly. Like, you know, they fill the time really well. There's no real lull in this film. You know, everything's sort of there for a reason. Everything has its symbolism and things like that. So I really like that aspect of it. The other thing I want to point out is, right, I know we all fucking hate Chris and we all hate Bobby and whatever else, right? I fucking hate Norma.
Oh, Norma is such a wee cow.
Norma is a wee cow because she's a fucking closeted lesbian. That's her problem.
She is.
So that's why she's mean to everyone. She's a self-hating gay.
She has rainbows on her fucking hat that she wears right at the start, yeah.
And she wears it to the prom as well.
She also has the most awkward kiss with a man on screen ever. That fucking scene where they're like switching the ballot papers.
Because her heart's not in it. She wants it to be Chris.
There you go. But of course, a shout out to PJ Souls, because that's who plays Norma. And she is Annie in my favourite movie of all time, Halloween. Just to shout that out. But yeah, I fucking hate her because I remember, like, sometimes I think as well, she was more memorable for me as a bully, like, at school. Like, if I was to think back, there was always, like, the fucking really loud one. But they might not have necessarily been, like, your main bully. They were just the one that would always point and laugh and always point out all the little things, weren't they?
It's always, like, the person in the background who just, like, backs up the main one. But you kind of hate them more because you can see that they know it's wrong and they still do it.
Yeah, and they're making it worse. You know, they're egging this person on. If they weren't there, the bully might... The bullying might not even happen because there's not someone there to make the bully feel bad when they get their comeuppance. You know what I'm sort of saying? Like,
yeah, and even with the scene where we do get the pig's blood falling down, Norma is the first one to actually piss herself laughing and pointing at Carrie, and she's taken so much enjoyment out of it.
Well, that's it as well, because other people in the school are starting to speak to Carrie, you know, and they're starting to get to know her a little bit. You know, when she arrives with Tommy, I don't know who the girl is that's speaking to her. I don't know I couldn't remember, but, you know, she starts to speak to her and she's like, oh, well, you can come and sit with us. And, you know, she's slowly starting to be accepted by certain people. Now, I'm not saying that everything is hunky-dory, you know, it's not. There's still so many issues, but you can see, like, people's opinions of Carrie starting to turn.
And when she's crowned prom queen, like, everybody's cheering. Like, it's actually a really nice moment.
And I love the score in that moment as well. I think, barring that opening scene that we were talking about with the sort of porn music, I fucking love the score to this movie. I think the score... the score
Magical
to this movie...
Wah, wah.
That's what it is, isn't it?
It is.
That's what that opening scene is. But I think the score to this movie is fucking amazing.
Yeah, I really wanted to... I was wanting to discuss that as well, kind of when we got near the end. The score in this is so good, from the really nice scenes, like you say, when Carrie's going up and we have the slow-mo of everyone, like, waving and saying congrats, to the scenes where there's the tension between her and Margaret and the thunder and the lightning. And the score, I think it also knows when to be subtle, because when we get the scene where the pig's blood is thrown on her, it's silent. And it's silent for, like, a good minute. And I think that's really important to note, because, like we've always said, less is sometimes more. And that just gives you a chance to kind of... It sinks in for the audience, like, holy shit, that actually happened. And, like, I thought that was quite smart. And then the score that comes after that, when chaos starts...
It's very psycho-esque as well. I don't know if you guys noticed, picked up on that, but there was a lot... not just in this scene, but throughout the film, I find myself being like, oh, that sounds like a cue from Psycho.
Definitely. It's the way that Carrie's eyes move, and she's, like, looking at different things, and we can get into that now with... can we just say how good Sissy Spacek is in this scene? Her facial expression, her body language in this is, like, actually terrifying.
It's the eyes. She's got really piercing eyes. I don't know if that's her actual eye colour, if she was wearing contacts or whatever. I know it's 70s, so I would assume maybe that's her natural eyes. But it's her eyes. They're so piercing, and it says a lot about someone. She does a lot of acting with her eyes, you know, and I think that's something that's really, really difficult to do. So that definitely speaks to the overall performance by Sissy Spacek.
Jonathan Fisk, who's, like, the art direction, they're married, but they were both really inspired by, like, the Romantic period in art for her performance. So she tried to incorporate, like, really dramatic elements either at the start or the end of each scene. Like, she really wanted to be in, like, very dramatic poses, either coming into or exiting a scene. So I think, especially in this scene, you can see that like extra bit of drama that's brought into it. You can see those influences in her performance throughout the film.
Definitely. And it you know, in this scene where, so we've had the pig's blood thrown over her, and Carrie slowly, she's using her telekinetic powers and she's getting back at everyone. This is the scene where everybody gets their comeuppance, and it's slowly but surely, you know, I think there's water that's like spouting everywhere, and then we start getting people getting electrocuted, like the PE teacher, Miss Collins, she gets electrocuted, and so does the principal, and then we get the fire. But in that scene, like, she's standing relatively still. She's not moving about or anything. Like, Carrie is as calm as a cucumber, just, like, causing absolute terror.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's I think it's a fire hose, isn't it, that she turns on that causes all the water to spout out. And at this point as well, fucking Tommy's been killed by the bucket. You know, he's kicked the bucket, for lack of a better term. You know, and I felt kind of bad that he ended up sort of biting it at the end, you know, because he's obviously really pissed off as well that this has happened, because he's almost not as equal, but like, he's been a butt of this joke too, because he gets the pig blood on him as well, and he obviously wasn't in on it as well, so I do feel kind of bad for him that he meets his end. And obviously,
I mean, that's the thing about this whole scene. Like, if Carrie obviously didn't do what she did, probably could have got Chris and Billy done for murder. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they kill him with the dropping of the bucket, which is probably one of the shittest deaths on the podcast. It's so bad, bless him.
Don't know, some of those from Birdemic. It gives it a run for its money.
But, like, when that first happens, I thought he was just knocked out.
Yeah, so
I didn't realize he was dead.
But someone says it, doesn't they? Someone says they've killed him.
Yeah, and kind of, oh, all right. Like, it's a thump on the head, but I didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah, and it's never really sort of referenced again. But obviously, you know, him and Sue are the two people that Carrie doesn't kill. Everyone else, obviously, you know, which, and they're the two that was ultimately being nice to her at the end. Now, I do have issues with the fact that, like I've already said, that this even was a plan of theirs, because I still think it's a bit shitty for you to go to your boyfriend, go and ask that lassie out. She's going to have no chance because you're still wee me. You know, you're going to big her up, and then either it's going to go terribly and she's going to feel like shit, or it's going to go well and then she's going to feel like shit because you're coming back to me. You know what I'm saying? So I still feel like it was a bit of a shitty plan, but their heart was in the right place for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, they went into it with good intentions, even though it wasn't the best plan. They're saints compared to everyone else, really, aren't they, when you look at it?
Yeah, pretty much, because she's also the only one who actually stands up to Chris. You know, in that scene where they're getting detention earlier on, Chris is trying to get her to stop, and she's like, no. She's telling her no.
And in that scene as well, like, just before the bucket falls over, Sue is the one that notices something's going on, and she's trying to get under the stage.
It takes her a fucking year and a half, though, to spot the fucking bucket. The rope is, like, wiggling away. It's, like, here. It's right in front of her face. And then, like, half an hour later, she's like, oh, a rope.
To be fair, I would do that because I don't notice stuff.
But what I then got really confused about as well is that Mrs. Collins starts dragging her out of the prom, and that confused me. Like, why did she do that?
Because she thinks her initial suspicion that her and Tommy are trying to do something horrible to Carrie is correct. And she's not, obviously, you can see Sue struggling, like, listen to me! And Miss Collins is not listening, because she's like, you're a little bitch and you're trying to ruin this for Carrie. When in actual fact, if she'd just listened, then they maybe could have stopped it, or they maybe could have pointed out.
She could have maybe, like, jumped out the way or
rather
something.
Rather than, obviously, like, she could have jumped out the way, but, Carrie also gets, like, completely paranoid and is like, everybody's done this to me on purpose. Like, she thinks her mother's words are true. Yeah, and it's actually, if Miss Collins had just listened to Sue in the first place, we probably could have avoided all this.
Yeah, because, like, you see that as well, though, because Carrie, when she's sort of looking out the crowd, the teachers and Mrs. Collins is laughing at her as well, and that I feel like that didn't happen.
No.
So like, you know that speaks to her paranoia about it, and you know, ultimately, you know, she thinks what her mother says to her was all completely true and right, and because it happened.
Yeah, it did happen, and you know, that would be such a traumatic thing to happen. I know we've spoken about that, but it, just putting yourself in Carrie's shoes, like it's absolutely atrocious, and you know, the shame, the humiliation of it all, like you can kind of understand why she's absolutely lost her shit. But yeah, we get the death scene, and the whole school basically goes up in flames, and Carrie just casually walks out. I mean, yeah, just walks out really. And then we have Billy and Chris in the car, and Chris sees her and is immediately just like, oh, got to run over her. And you can see it in her eyes.
I was screaming at my TV at this point, like, have you not done enough to this lassie and now you're going to fucking run her over? Like, leave her alone.
What is her fucking problem? That's the thing, like, you see her, like, your first reaction is to be like, I need to murder this girl? What the actual fuck is wrong with these people? Like,
it's like, when I was watching, like, other analysis and stuff of it, it's like, Chris, because she's just seen Carrie murder all of her friends, it's like, which was also her fault.
But she also doesn't know that.
Pig's blood.
But she also doesn't know that. Like, she's not going to look at this whole scene that's just happened and be like, ah, she's got telekinetic powers. That's not where your brain would go, you know? Like, sure. So she doesn't fucking know that.
I know, that's when I was a bit like, I don't know about that one, but yeah, I was just screaming at my TV, like, who the fuck do you think you are?
I think at this point, it just goes to show, like, how unhinged Chris is, and really that she'll stop at nothing to get back at Carrie. Like, what started off as, like, a really petty thing of her getting detention.
Even, like, get back at Carrie. Get back at Carrie for what? Carrie didn't grasp
her. Get back at her for having her. Get back at her for having her period, you know? Like,
how dare you have a vagina?
How dare you have a vagina in front of me?
That's it in a nutshell. That's this movie in a nutshell. That's the plot. Oh. But we have, like, Carrie, like, spots it straight away, and then we have the car flip, and then they both die in an explosion, which I have to say,
such an awesome stunt, by the way.
So satisfying. I was like, yes.
This is true. I mean, this is truly, I'm sure one of you was planning on saying this, but this is truly a you go girl type of movie, isn't it? Like, you see, yeah. I don't know if you've seen these threads across social medias, especially around things like Midsommar, you know, in that final scene where Florence Pugh's just like smiling away and people are like, you go girl. This is definitely one of those fucking movies, isn't it? Because you're just like, good for you. Like, kill these motherfuckers.
Definitely. I'm like cheering in the background, like, yes, yes. And then after this scene, we have Carrie going into the house. And this is quite a long scene, actually. I think the score in this bit is really good as well. She's walking around. There's candles all over the house. She doesn't know where her mum is. She goes into the bath. And then we get that really kind of eerie scene where, like, her mum's behind the door. And then there's the light that pops off. And you're like,
but
oh, shit.
You see her mum behind the door before she goes into the bath. And it took me a minute to see it. I didn't see it straight away. And then I saw her face and I was like, oh, you bastard. You know?
Saw it and I thought it was, like, really strange. But I think, obviously, there's a cut to the mum just chopping vegetables.
Oh, yeah, what was that about?
I think it's a metaphor for a penis.
The mum's completely, like, gone at this point. Like, if you suspected that she was maybe potentially unwell at the start, like, she's definitely had a psychotic break by the end. It's just, like, even, like, the look on her face in some of these moments, it's just, like, it's quite terrifying, actually, like, the way she's carrying on, because she's just a woman on the edge at this point. She's got nothing to lose. Like, she thinks, oh, Carrie's gone to the devil, like, I've got nothing now. And yeah, she's just willing to risk everything, and it's really scary.
As well, what I like as well is, sorry, it's a bit like a callback to that opening scene where Carrie's in the shower. You know, she has that moment of clarity with herself in the bath. And it's like, that's like the only place where She gets a minute to herself. Like, it's free of bullying. It's free of being told that she's not good enough. It's free that she's being told she's a fucking witch. Or she's the devil's inside her or whatever else. So I like that sort of callback to the opening scene.
Yeah, I like that. It like you say, it's that it shows that she's so trapped that the only place that she can feel like she can have a breather and like be herself, really, and be okay within herself is in a bathroom, is in a bath, is in a shower.
One of the other things I kind of like about that scene as well is just kind of like visually you look at her and like Carrie when she's getting into the bath and she looks like she's suffered a horrific injury. She's that covered in blood. But then she has, it's just like a mental injury. It's like an emotional injury instead. So I kind of like the visual representation of that.
Yeah, that's a fair point, because you can only imagine what's going on in her mind psychologically. It's kind of showing it on the outside, but without the physical marks, but just her covered in the blood. I also want to give props to Piper Laurie in this scene, because she really, she actually reminds me of like Kathy Bates in Misery. It's that kind of terrifying like face. Like you said, she's got nothing to lose, and you know, she's trying to comfort Carrie and being like, oh, it's okay, because you know she breaks down in front of her mom and it's like, it happened exactly as you said it would happen. They laughed at me, and like she's feeling awful, and then she says, oh, let's pray. And then we get that scene where she stabs Carrie, and you know just then on she's just like you say, she's completely lost it, and she will stop at nothing to kill her daughter.
Carrie gets her own back though. Fuck that bitch.
Oh, she does. Can we talk about that death? What did you guys think of that? So we get the scene where she's like throwing every single sharp object she can at her mum.
She does fucking great. Like, I'll just say that straight off the bat. She does fucking great. That is like, it takes her such a long time to die. You know, she's stabbed all this time and then she's like, oh. And then there's a bit of silence. And then there's just like another little,
Was it just me, or does she kind of make sex noises when she dies?
Oh, yeah, she's enjoying it a bit too much.
Yeah, but it's like, she's getting so much pleasure of, like, going to God. She's, like, finally going to be at peace, so she's, like, so happy about leaving this realm and going to the next one. Not that I believe in any of that, but...
God's no end for her. God's no end.
Well... That's it. I think a lot of Christians don't fucking realise that as well, and many people from many other religions. But anyway, she's getting this like sick sort of pleasure from going to God. Like she's happy about it because she's dedicating her life to it, more so than even like dedicating her life to motherhood.
I think
she's dedicated her life to God.
It's also a sort of satisfaction. She's right. Everything she's been saying, she's been right, you know?
True, I never thought about that. And
no matter what anyone says, everyone loves being right, you know? So I think there's maybe a little bit of that in there as well.
Definitely. And I think like it also makes you think as well, like, if she was able to go through with her plans and kill Carrie, I kind of thought, oh, she's probably going to kill herself afterwards as well. That was probably her plan anyway. But yeah, you're right. Because like that scene, I love Piper Laurie, but my God, it's just all the moaning and the, oh, yes, stab me.
It's like when she's actually dead that before. As well, she has this like angelic, serene look on her face. Like she's smiling. She's happy she's dead.
I'm happy she's dead.
I also like the imagery as well, that all the knives were in the exact same place as the creepy Jesus in the cupboard, and it's just in the same place as well.
That's a fair point. I didn't notice that. That's actually a nice little.
She just didn't have the creepy glowing fucking eyeballs, spooky Jesus.
I know,
they're like fluorescent yellow. It's so weird.
Then we have the house falling apart. So the house falls apart. It gets set on fire, and we're made to assume that Carrie and Margaret die in the house. And then we get this last scene where we go back to Sue. And I think for a first time viewer, I don't know, I'd be interested to see what you think, Lindsay, because like I think if I was trying to think back, because I can't remember the first time I watched this, but if I watched it for the first time, I would have maybe thought it was like a dream sequence, the whole thing or something. So I don't know. What did you think of this last scene?
Well, the first
scene?
Time I watched it, I did not. And I fucking shat myself in that. Came out of the charcoal. I was like, what the fuck is this? And then you wake up to the dreams, that it's a dream scene. And then you're like, when she's screaming and all the rest of it, it's like, well, actually, that's probably more accurate of what it would be like, you know, survivor's guilt and all the rest of it. Like, Sue's going to have an absolutely terrible time. And this fucking nonsense that the doctor comes out with, oh, she's young enough to forget. No, she's
fucking 16! Right, she's fucking 16.
Oh, she'll not remember it.
You've seen everybody die, you've seen your boyfriend die, your mates die. Oh, it's fine.
She'll be fine. Give her to you, she'll be fine.
Give her a pat on the back and some mindfulness. She'll be alright.
Absolutely not. But yeah, no, I did not know at first it was a dream sequence, and I fucking shat myself when I seen that hand come out. I was
We'll get into it in the trivia, but this end scene is actually completely different from what's in the novel. And Stephen King has actually said himself he prefers the ending in the movie to the book. And looking at the book, I haven't read the book, but looking at the ending for the book, I kind of agree. I actually quite like this end scene. What
Stephen,
do you think of it?
Stephen King's shite at endings. Sorry. he makes fun of it himself. They make fun of it in It Chapter 2. You know, with James McAvoy's character, who's an author who can't end a book. So they sort of poke, and that's a reference to Stephen King as well. So like he pokes fun at that, but yeah, I would agree that I like the ending to this film. Also, like that whole scene where her arm just sort of comes out of the ground as well. It's the only real jump scare of the movie. It's the only scare of this film. This isn't a scary film, and I think this is a really good example of showing someone a film doesn't have to be, you know, super scary. We don't get the first death until what, 20 minutes before the end, 15 minutes before the end, and it's the big school scene. So I think this is a really good example of one of those movies as well, you know, for these people who are really sort of just gore hounds and love all those types of films, which are perfectly legitimate, but I think this is a really perfect example of this type of movie. I like the ending to this film, though. I thought it was smart, although that fucking doctor needs to lose his license straight away.
I know we've come on like loops and bounds when it comes to like psychology, psychiatry, and mental health and stuff, but to think that a 16-year-old girl is just going to forget all that, it doesn't take a medical degree to know that's wrong.
A 6-year-old wouldn't forget all that.
Exactly.
I love a fucking 16.
We've seen that in this movie, adults are just completely incompetent. They don't know what the fuck's going on. I think it kind of speaks for, you know, from the, bless her, she knows she had good intentions, but the PE teacher to the principal, none of them really, I don't know. They just don't have any emotions, really. Most of them don't. I don't know. They're just all imbeciles, really. But I like your point. Oh, sorry, there you go.
It's like, I feel like a lot of the adults forget what it's like to be a teenager, and
yeah,
you know, I'm 29 and I haven't forgotten, you know, and even though things are quite different for, you know, the Gen Z teenagers nowadays, it's like I can still empathize with them and understand some of the things they're going through, whereas in this film they just seem absolutely fucking clueless, and it's just like, did you just pop out like that, like just come out your maw fully grown adult?
Do you think that's because I think that's very true to life though as well. Like, I don't think this is something that's been, and obviously I'm not saying this is for everyone, but I think that's something that was really sort of felt like quite true to life. Like, that's how kind of how things were from a lot of adults, and I think that's probably down to the fact that when they were teenagers, you know, it was wartime and, you know, they and all that jazz was going on. So I kind of liked that though, because it did feel very sort of very almost true to life. I feel like, you know, they just didn't have that experience, so they couldn't possibly relate to how teenagers in the 70s and then moving forward through the years, whereas I feel like now, where we all hope, you'd like to think that we all had much nicer upbringings and maybe a slightly better time, although I don't know how much I did enjoy my teenage years. You know, we can maybe empathize, like you say, empathize a little bit more with like the next generation.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I'm in agreement with that. And I also want to touch on, I know we spoke about the score and we've spoken about the cinematography. I think it is important to note that this isn't a gory film. Like, really, when you come down to it, like, the majority of this, it's a slow burn. Even though it's a short movie, it's like, I think it's just over an hour and a half. We don't really get any gore or any deaths, like you say, right up until that kind of final scene. And I think it's worth noting that, because, like you say, horror movies can... You know, we don't appreciate gatekeeping here at all, but horror movies don't have to be a gore fest to be a horror movie. I think this film does really well in terms of anticipation and suspense and pacing. Yes, I just wanted to flag that.
I think in some ways this film is kind of about like the horrors of being a teenage girl in some ways. And I think people forget about the horror of everyday situations, like the horror of having your first period in front of all your peers, like the horror of mental health, the horror of grief. Like, these things can be made into horror films, horror stories, and they don't have to be all blood, guts and jump scares to be effective in that.
I think this is a really important movie in cinema. Like, even though we've spoken about it, it definitely it is problematic. I think it's an important movie for horror, an important movie for cinema, like you say, for especially for women as well. We've all met a Chris, a Norma, we've all known a Billy or a Tommy, and like you say, it is the horror about real life. And also, like, I think it's a movie that everyone should watch, really, on how to not be a bully and kind of have a bit of sympathy for people.
You know what, like, I think as well, taking it to the extreme, obviously this film is taking this to I've said already, it's taking us to the very, very extreme, but also maybe just teaching bullies that there's fucking consequences for your actions. You know, that might not be death, it might not be in a fucking grisly prom scene, but, you know, if you treat someone in a certain way, there's going to be consequences for your actions.
Oh, I thought that was never leaving your hometown and popping out three kids, three different dads, whereas people you bullied actually go on and be successful.
Yes.
We go on to
you can't hear, but clicking my fingers.
We go on to have a very successful... There you go. We go on to have a very successful horror podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, bitch. But because at the end of the day, karma's a bitch. Treat people how you want to be treated, because if you don't, it's going to come for you. I feel like they should have had, I don't know why it's reminded me, you know, like in Walking Dead, it's like Clementine will remember that. Carrie will remember that. Yeah. And she gets her comeuppance at the end. But that's kind of, so I know we've kind of gone through the movie in like a chronological order, but is there anything either of you want to bring up that we haven't covered yet? Any themes, any scenes, any characters, or...
I mean, I just want to sort of re-emphasise that thing. I don't think there's a bad performance in this movie, even from, like, I know we talked about how shitty the characters and that, but even from people like John Travolta and, you know, Tommy and Norma, you know, PJ Souls, she still does a good job at portraying the character that she does. I think the performances in this movie are really, really great, and the score is fantastic. Obviously, we have some problematic scenes in the beginning, but I would agree with you, and it says that I think this is absolutely one of those must-watch films. Not just for, you know, there are certain films that if you just want to be a horror fan that you kind of have to see, like, you know, Halloween's, like Your Things, like Alien and all that jazz. This is one of those as well. But this is just a must-watch film, you know, for... Like we were saying, for those themes of bullying and for young girls and things like that, I think this is a really, really key horror movie.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah,
was
I was going to say I agree. Piper Laurie and Sissy Spacek were both Oscar nominated for their performances in this film. And I think that's definitely well deserved. It's a very tough category that year, so unfortunately didn't win. They lost out to Faye Dunaway and I can't remember the name of the supporting actress who was also in Network. But a really amazing performances from them. And I would say this is definitely a must-watch film as well, just for like film fans in general. It's a super relatable film in some ways, or like you can relate to Carrie very, very, very well. and in a lot of ways it's timeless in that way as well. This is what I was wanting to say. One of our Twitter followers, Galileo, one of our Patreons as well.
We love you, Galileo.
Tagged us in something yesterday on Twitter, actually, about how Carrie and Regan are called, Regan from The Exorcist, are called villains by some people in the horror community, and it's something that I wholeheartedly disagree with. What do you think about the villain-victim?
Well, that was kind of what I was sort of alluding to earlier, because I also saw that message that she had sent, she had sort of tagged us in. When I was speaking earlier about who is the actual true villain of this movie, it's certainly not Carrie, and Regan in The Exorcist is in the same. It's certainly not those two, you know, especially, I think, even more pronounced in The Exorcist, because she's actually possessed by Pazuzu, so it's Pazuzu that's the main, but the big bad there. Here, the big villain in the film is Chris in this film. Although, you know, John Travolta and Margaret White and they all play their roles. I don't know if they're the real big villain in this movie, but at the same time, I feel like as well, sort of going back to what we were speaking about in terms of, you know, we don't necessarily know what's going on in the home life as well of Chris. And it sort of leads me to think, like, maybe there isn't a villain in this film, you know? Maybe the villain is, and I'm so delighted, the villain is Christiane.
It's that nature versus nurture as well, isn't it? It's the environments that they've grown up in that also...
Absolutely.
Shape them.
And, you know, there's no excuse for what Chris or for what Margaret did in this film. They did horrendous, heinous things, and they certainly deserved their karma. Speaking of karma, that fucking kid at the beginning that fell off his bike as soon as he fucking started calling Carrie names, I was just like, yes.
I took a note of that as well. What did I say? Because I was going to speak about that. What was it? It was funny.
Creepy, it was funny, creepy, guys, I promise.
Creepy, I put, creepy kid falls off the bike, haha, yes, you little shit.
But yeah, it was just like instant karma, and I loved it. But yeah, you know, so I found it really difficult to, if you're looking at it at maybe a slightly more deep level, to really find a true villain in this movie. But obviously, you know, if you're just watching it, it's Chris and Mrs. White, you know.
I feel like a kind of... a bad guy in this film is like the lack of kinship among the women. I feel like if the girls and other women were more supportive of each other in this film, then a lot of things that happened would not have happened. I think if one girl or a couple of girls would have been like, oh, it's okay, Carrie, like, you know, you've started your period, and just like helped her out, because she's screaming with hysterics, and they just add to it by screaming back at her and throwing shit at her. And I think if just there was one sliver of empathy or kinship among these women, then so many aspects of this film would never have happened.
Do you not think it would have been so different as well? You know, obviously Sue does feel bad for her. I think it would have been so much more if it was actually Sue that had approached her and not come up with this shitty plan for her boyfriend to ask her to the prom.
I know, and also I know it's the 70s, and we don't do proms or anything over here, but if Sue had just been like, do you know what, let's go to the prom together, it's like a group of girls or something, and the stupid arcade rules in school allowed that, I think that would have been so much more beneficial for her, because what Carrie needs isn't a smooch off the most popular boy in school, it's a friend, and Sue would have been so much more beneficial to her than Tommy.
At the end of the day, if there had been that kinship, like you say, it really plays on that women fighting against each other. And as a teenage girl, we've all experienced that, you know, it's this kind of pack mentality of, you know, there's this leader, this queen bee, and everyone's so desperate to fit in and to not be the one that's getting pointed and shouted at. So when, you know, Chris starts picking on Carrie, they're all like, well, I've got to join in as well, regardless how I feel of Carrie or not, because if I don't, that's going to be me on the other side at some point. So yeah, and actually that's a fair point, I hadn't made that point yet, but The fact that they have to have a date for prom is absolutely ridiculous. Why can't you go with your mates? That is so fucking sexist.
I went stag to my prom.
I didn't go to a prom. I didn't have one.
Yeah, we'd have proms at our school. Either.
We had one for 5th year and one for 6th year. And I went alone on my 6th year one because the girl I asked out ignored me.
Right.
And then so I just refused point blank to go to my 6th year one.
Just go in style, you know. Like if I was gonna go, I would have gone with my mates as well. But that's a fair point. I think partly that's because of the '70s as well. But like, that's not fair. Why should you have to go on a date with somebody to go to prom? And you know, they're 16 as well. Some people might not even be interested in dating at that point. You know, they just want to have a good time with their mates, and it's their senior prom. They're kind of, it's like their last hurrah. So yeah, that's a bit fucked, eh?
Yeah.
Can I just mention, sorry, I know we're going on a bit now, but can I just mention as well that fucking creepy English teacher? He was just like, he was so...
I loved it when he died because he was such a cunt.
He really is.
Such a cunt. Like, he is making fun of Carrie as well. It's like, we were saying before, like, all these people in positions of power in this school are so messed up. The PE teacher smacking lasses and... The principal just like not even knowing who any of his pupils are, and then this guy like basically starting to bully Callie himself
just because she liked the poem.
I know.
Where's Child Protective Services? Somebody needs to report this fucking school.
And it's the way as well. I know Tommy like reveals that it wasn't him who wrote the poem, but he's like, you wrote this, you're meant to be throwing footballs in that. It's like, don't put him in a box. He can write poetry if he wants.
Exactly.
And still be a football player. That's allowed.
And you know what is the other thing as well is, but like that whole thing that he wasn't in on it and he actually was being nice to her. He is a type of character that usually either has no depth or is the bully themselves. And I thought that was a really nice way of sort of subverting that trope, you know, because he actually was one of the only two or three people in this movie that felt anything for Carrie or felt bad enough that they were at least going to try and do something nice for her.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes if you were sitting with somebody who's just like, oh, I'm not pretty, oh, you would just be like, oh, shut the fuck up. But he's actually not, he's like,
the he's fucking actually... sympathy. Like, if you're looking for sympathy, Lindsay's not the place to go. We've learned so much about you. You don't fucking touch her. You don't do anything. You don't speak to her. She's not going to give you sympathy. Don't ask for a compliment. Fuck's sake.
We love you, really.
We do.
I'm a nice person, I promise. He's actually really sympathetic to what's going on in her life.
Even the cat's Pebbles like, yeah, you bitch.
I know. Pebbly, you have something to say.
Yeah. Oh, little Pebbles.
Pebbles fighting against bullies, eh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
I like how we all now just have seen stealing cats, because obviously Ripley kind of tried to steal the show yesterday, and then Blossom's made many appearances now on the podcast.
Many.
And now Pebbles coming in, kicking in the door.
Has to happen at least once, Kitty Cat on the show, each episode. But yeah, I feel like we've probably gone on the plot long enough now. So if you guys are okay, I think we should move on to the trivia.
Yeah, sure.
So... we'll start off with the budget. So the budget of this movie was $1.8 million, which was actually like a significant budget, especially for considering it was the 70s. And it grossed $33.8 million in the box office. So it was a pretty big box office hit, especially for the time. I don't know what that would be in today's currency.
I think that's a few hundred million, to be honest. Yeah. So.
And it's such an iconic movie as well. Like when we were speaking about Carrie, even if you've not seen the movie, you know that pig blood scene with it going, you know, over her head at the prom night. And you can see how Carrie has influenced media throughout the years. Like, I think I'd spoken about this on the live stream, but there's even like TV series that are coming out now, like on Netflix, like I'm not okay with this. I'm not okay with this has nearly a play-by-play scene at the end of that prom scene, and it's about a telekinetic girl. Even like my favorite video game, Life is Strange, even though it's like, and I don't give me that look, you're kind of like, oh, you're trying to bring up Life is Strange again. But it does, like the time travel telekinesis in Life is Strange 2, you can see that it's influenced by that. And even in drag, we've seen, you know, people recreating that look. You guys have noticed it as well, I'm sure, in a variety of different media.
Oh, yeah. It's like you say, it's one of the most iconic scenes in a horror movie ever. Everyone knows that sort of just still image of Sissy Spacek standing there covered in pig's blood, you know? It's up there, you know. There's very, like, if you're thinking of individual images, you know, you think like of the priest standing outside the house in The Exorcist, or the Kari scene, you know, it's very much of that ilk.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll go on to the other trivia. So Pebbles is now on my lap now. She's decided. Keep her quiet for now. There was so much trivia for this movie. I have to say, first off, when I was looking at trivia for this, there is tons upon tons of trivia. So I've only cherry-picked a few, but if you guys have any, feel free to jump in. The first one, so what is it? You laughing at the cat?
Oh no, I shook my head because I didn't bother looking.
I know Lindsay sometimes does like to look at trivia, so I don't know if you have any, but the first one that I thought was quite funny. So Stephen King was actually quite a newcomer of Carrie's when Carrie was released, and in the trailer, you'll notice his first name is actually misspelled. It's written Steven, not Stephen.
I saw that, and it's so funny because like Carrie was his first novel, and it was made into a film 2 years later. So nowadays, like Stephen King's such a powerhouse, like household name. Everybody knows him. Everybody's seen at least one Stephen King adaptation. But for Carrie, it was like, Stephen King, who cares? There's only at least one pick.
Stephen King who?
Exactly. So yeah, I've seen that as well. I thought it was so funny.
Now the man has like 200 plus books and got every remake, movie, TV show under the fucking sun.
I mean, he's the most influential man in horror history ever. Full stop.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I don't think anyone could disagree with that. The next piece of trivia I had, Brian De Palma, the director, he ended up casting Carrie at the same time as George Lucas was casting for Star Wars. The two were actually pretty good friends, and they made the decision to hold joint auditions at the same time for both movies, which I thought was quite interesting.
So you're telling me that Sissy Spacek was like Carrie in 1 minute and then Princess Leia in the next?
You never know. She might have auditioned for both.
I saw that as well. Apparently they were friends because like they were the only two with beards.
For a minute there, I thought you meant Carrie and Princess Leia.
Pala. But yeah, they were pals because they were the only two that had beards. Like, that's so fucking immature.
That's kind of brilliant. We'd already mentioned about the score and the nods to Psycho. Brian De Palma, I'd actually had hoped to convince Bernard Herrmann, who scored Psycho, to score Carrie, but he passed away in 1975, before Carrie went into production. But you can see, as we mentioned, like there's a clear influence of that in the score throughout. So I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, big time. Like at times it does just sound like that Psycho, you know, music that's playing, doesn't it? You know, so I think it's pretty easy to spot, isn't it, how much that influenced the score.
Yeah, definitely. And on that note as well, like there's a lot of references in this to Psycho. So the name of the school is Bates High, which is obviously a reference to Norma Bates and Norman Bates. So I thought that was quite cool. I think there's actually more than that reference. I think there's a few more. I just kind of cherry picked that one, but yeah, you can see influences throughout it.
Yeah, definitely.
As we'd mentioned, the ending of the movie is different from the novel, and Stephen King actually prefers the ending of the movie. But and like I say, I haven't read the book, and I don't think either of you have you?
No, I'm My brain doesn't work for books anymore.
You can't do the thing. Yeah, you know what? That's fair. Sometimes I don't have the patience for books. But the ending of the book, I had a look just to get like a quick synopsis of it. So what happened was, the ending of the book, there's a woman in Tennessee that, so this is the end scene. It's completely a different person. It's not Sue. It's a woman that we've never heard of before. So it's a woman in Tennessee who's writing to a man in Georgia, telling them that a woman in Tennessee is writing to a man in Georgia, telling him that her niece appears to be moving things with her mind. And that's kind of how it ends. So you're kind of thinking, is she going to become the next Carrie? But there's like no connection between this woman in Tennessee and like Sue or anything like that. It's just like another case in the States, if you will.
I wonder, because all of Stephen King's books are meant to be connected. So I wonder if this person who they're referring to has actually cropped up somewhere else in the Stephen King
universe. You know what? I kind of want to go in. I don't know if either of you have watched Castle Rock.
No.
So it's a TV show. I don't know if it's on Shudder or on Prime or whatever. It's a TV show, but it's based around the Stephen King universe. So it's got, I think, like Annie Wilkes shows up and some, and I think in the majority it's some of the slightly lesser known characters. But I've not watched all of it, so I would be really interested to see what, if there is any sort of Carrie references in there.
That's a fair point, actually. I didn't think of that. It could be a little nod to something else. Maybe even if it's just in another novel, just as like a little Easter egg.
Yeah.
But that's all the trivia I had. I kind of just wanted to keep it a bit short and sweet. Is there any other trivia that you guys had that you wanted to bring up?
The only other bit of trivia I have is in the fire department kind of advised against having the hose at full blast in like the final scene, because he said it, you know, the water comes out with a lot of force and it can like hurt somebody. Well, the lassie that plays Norma got it full blast in the ear and it shattered her eardrum. So the last scene in the film that you see of her, and her eardrum has shattered, so the reaction on her face and like everything that's going on there is completely real.
And nail off him now, Norma.
That is fucking painful though, because I've had a burst eardrum on a flight before and I was crying. It is horrific.
Yeah, I've heard that bursting your eardrums is pretty horrendous, and not just that as well, like if this flows is like flows, if this hose is like flapping about the place, right, the fucking metal bit in the end will just kill somebody.
Yeah,
that's a fair point as well. Health and safety was where was health and safety on this movie?
It was the 70s.
In a nutshell, 70s. But no, that kind of just shows, like we've spoken before, the treatment of actors and actresses on sets and stuff like that, the amount of stuff that they go through. Just abysmal, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Okay. Well, in that case, we'll move on to the ratings. We'll start off with the IMDb rating. So the IMDb rating for this is 7.4 out of 10, which I think is pretty justified, would you
IMDb
guys say?
IMDb is always pretty low with a rating. Like, unless something is the best thing since sliced bread, it doesn't generally get above a 7.5 anyway.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I thought it'd be a little bit higher, but I can kind of see that. And then Metacritic was a little bit higher. It was 85 out of 100. So they favoured it a bit more than IMDb. And we'll get into Rotten Tomatoes critics ratings there. I'm quite excited to do this. I'm the one that doesn't have to guess this time. It'll be a battle against Ian and Lindsay. I'm going to start off with you, Lindsay. So what do you think the Rotten Tomatoes critics rating is?
I feel like the critics would be quite favourable to this, so I'm going to go for 90.
Okay.
Oh, that's high. That's high. I feel like you're right, because this is, at the end of the day, nominated for Oscars. So the critics, obviously, I would assume, were big fans of this. But were they 90% fans of this? I'm going to take a risk, and I'm going to go 93.
Well, you know what? You got it exactly right, Ian. It's 93%.
Fucking get in there.
That was close, though. You're reveling in that.
Slag.
Oh, I'm gonna have to host the next quiz, guys. I love being the one in power. And just watch you two fight.
Do you know how I felt that day?
Yes. Yeah. I get it there. So we'll move on to the audience rating. So we'll start off with Ian now. What do you think the audience rated the movie?
I'll go lower. I still think the audience will like this, but I'm not sure it will get such a high score. So I'll go 80.
Okay. And Lindsay, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to go for 85.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but Ian takes it again because the rating was 77.
That is quite a bit lower than what I thought it would be.
It is. I thought it would be the other way around, honestly, because I know the critics can be quite harsh. I thought because it's such a cult classic, people would have been in the 90s, so I was surprised by that myself.
Yeah, it's a little bit lower than I thought. I mean, it's still high, but, you know, I would have expected a little bit more.
On that note, then, we're going to go on to our ratings. So, we'll start off with you, Lindsay. What do you rate Carrie out of 10?
So, I think this is probably my favourite film that I've done on the podcast so far that I hadn't seen before. And I know when we spoke, I was kind of mentioned some of the problematic things about the film, but they aren't the first thing that pop into my head when I think about it. So I do tend to think about all the other positive things, and I did really enjoy it. I really just kind of fell in love with Carrie. So for that reason, I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
Ooh, that's pretty high. I get it, though, but I get the reasoning behind that. Like you say, it's such a classic, and even though it has its problems, it's the pros kind of outweigh the cons, at least for me anyway. Ian, what do you think? What are you going to rate it out of 10?
I think my crown as the generous rater is going away now. These are all just rating stuff high now, just to make me look bad. No, I agree with what Lindsay said there in terms of like that opening scene is not what you think of when you think of this sort of film. You know, you think of the pig's blood scene, you think of, you know, all the themes that are dealt with, the performances from like Piper Laurie and Sissy Spacek and all that. And this is a really great movie. Everyone does a good job. I am going to take points off for that opening scene, though, because it's fucking horrendous. I'm sorry. Like, it's just ridiculous. But, you know, as we've mentioned, this is one of the must-watch horror movies. The score is fantastic. The cinematography is great. They did a lot with this movie. But I'll give it an 8.5.
Yeah, so on my rating, I went really back and forth on this because I know I'd mentioned last week as well, Carrie is like one of my favourite horror movies, like hands down. It's when you think of classics as well, I think like Misery is probably my favourite Stephen King movie, but this is a very close second. I am going to take points off it though for that start scene, and also the scenes with Billy and Billy and Chris, and just the casual violence and the way it's not really addressed, like just rewatching it now a little bit older, that just doesn't really sit well with me. But at the same time, I can't deny that this is a classic. I do love this movie. I think it's a really important movie for anyone to watch, like the messaging about bullying and you know, people getting their comeuppance and all that kind of stuff. So I'm gonna give it an 8.5 as well.
Check you copycat.
Bitch, I've already got my rating in the notes, so.
Okay, sure.
So what does that give us an average, Ian?
So all of our scores combined with the critics gives Carrie an average rating of 8.3 out of 10. It makes it a 11th place on our list of horror movies that we have covered on the podcast. Gives it the exact same rating as Battle Royale and 1973's The Exorcist.
Oh.
So it's in good company. I'd say it's in good company.
Well, yeah, Exorcist is, we've talked about it, obviously, the widely considered to be the best, scariest horror movie of all time. So I would say that's pretty good company.
Yeah.
I really thought this film would break the top 10. So I'm a wee bit shocked at that. But again, I think we all thought The Exorcist would as well.
Well, I mean, Exorcist is in 10th. And this is in 11th, so it's right there.
It's right there.
I think for me, like, it's just more shocking that things like The Birds, which we still liked, but that's in the top 10.
That is a combination of the critics and the audience ratings do impact this a lot as well, so that does need to be taken into account.
Yeah, definitely.
But on that note, we'll go into some listener opinions as well, having a look at what everyone thought on Twitter, on the thread. So I've picked out a couple. The first one, we always have to give a shout out to Galileo. We love you, Galileo. And I thought Galileo had a really good comment on this. She said, in caps, holy crap balls. First of all, this movie guaranteed I wouldn't grow up to be an asshole bully. Second, Piper Laurie gave me nightmares. Stephen King nailed it with this story. And I'm in total agreement with that. Like, the whole, like, don't grow up into be an asshole bully. I think all kids should probably watch this, to be honest.
Yeah, and I like, you know, Stephen King did nail it. And with, like we were saying, with the possible exception of Misery, I think this is his other best sort of work.
Yeah, I would say so. And then we had another comment from Slay Away, who I've also been on recently for International Women's Month, Slay Away podcast. They said, yes, we love Carrie. It's a bit of a slow burn, but you get the creepy, the paranormal, the light gore. It explores a lot of what we go through in adolescence, and the film is just really well done. No remake can hold a candle to it. go on then, what's your thoughts there?
No, I mean, like, anyone who listened to our top five horror movies directed by women will know my thoughts on the remake. Listen, I prefer this to the remake, like, I'm not getting away from that, but I think the remake's pretty fucking good.
I do like the remake as well, and I kind of want to go into that after these listener opinions, just to touch on it quickly. I know we're going to be covering it later in the year, but I think it's important for us to address it. But no, I do agree with them. Like, it is a slow burn of a movie, but that's not a bad thing. I think the pacing in this is great, and I think they kind of encompass what you said as well, Lindsay, that it does, it at the heart of it is about adolescence and about being a teenage girl and, like, the horror of being a teenage girl in high school.
Yeah.
And what I like as well is, like, the pacing. It is a slow burn, as you said. But like I said earlier as well, never feels like it.
No.
Like,
yeah,
you're never clock watching in this film.
No, you're not. The last listener opinion that I picked for today is from Edward Limick. He said, it's my favourite Stephen King adaptation. Yes, I love it more than The Shining, which, if you told me that 5 years ago, I would have laughed out loud. It's really grown on me. Every aspect of the movie works. From the casting choices to Pino Donaggio's score, Peble agrees.
Yeah, like, I mean, it. Like, I don't think there is a certain section of the horror fandom that dislikes The Shining, and we can absolutely sit here, and I'm sure we will one day have that discussion about The Shining and about what went on behind the scenes with Stanley Kubrick and him just being a complete asshat. But I still think I'd probably just prefer The Shining, but this is great. It's definitely up there in contention with it.
I mean, for me, I prefer this to The Shining, but like you say, I think we'll probably have another discussion on this at, like, a later date.
I'll go for another couple hours on that one.
Oh yeah, that'll be like a 5-hour special or something.
There's a lot to unpack in that movie.
But yeah, thank you everyone for your listener opinions. I think overall everybody was, like, pretty much a fan of this movie. I think a lot of people can recognize, like, how iconic it is for the horror genre and how important it is for cinema. So I just want to say thank you everyone, really appreciate that.
Can I just say, is this the first time that you've picked a movie that might be universally loved? Because so far this year, your picks have been very divisive, shall we say.
No, but the thing is, with the choices I make, like, I didn't want to just pick movies this year that are things that I know everyone will really like. I wanted us to have discussions, and I wanted to pick... I honestly wanted to torture you a little bit as well,
know? We've all picked questionable movies at certain points of the year, apart from Lindsay, you got not very... Me. Apart from... let me fucking finish my sentence!
No!
Apart from Lindsay, who's gotten very strategic about this whole thing, we've all picked movies that are slightly better than others then, you know? Like, we haven't picked bangers every single week. Even you, Lindsay, have not picked a banger every single week. But But Lucy, you took the fucking cake in those first few weeks.
And I have no regrets. Do we want to touch... I know we're getting on now, but do we want to touch a little bit on the remake? I know we're going to be watching it later in the year, but I think it's important to kind of touch on it. You know, it's the 2013 one, which is... it's directed by Kimberly... is it Kimberly Pierce, I think?
Yes. Well, obviously, I know, Lindsay, you've not seen it yet, so I don't want to get too deep into it. I don't want to give away any spoilers. I don't want to do any of that, but... what I will say is I feel like it does a good job of sort of bringing some of these themes into the 21st century, into, you know, 40 years later, because a lot of the themes that this movie tackles are still prevalent to this day. You know, bullying is still a massive issue. You know, puberty, obviously something that we all go through, like, these things are still relevant today. That's one of the reasons why I kind of appreciate the fact that they remade this as well, because, you know, for a lot of younger people, if you're a young person getting into horror, you know, if you're 15, 16 and you're getting into horror, you might not know Carrie, you might not know the story, you might not know what it is in terms of the 76 version, and if your first introduction to it is the 2013 version, then, well, you know what, that's not a bad introduction either.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point to make. Like, in terms of the remake, I think the remake is solid. Like, we won't go, like I said, into too much detail, but the cinematography, the way it's been done in a modern lens as well in 2013, like we said, the original is in the 70s, and they, you know, the remake isn't based in the 70s. You know, it's based in a modern time, and that obviously impacts the plot pretty significantly, but the overall message stays the same. Bullying isn't ever going to go away. Puberty ain't ever going to go away. You know, it's a message that is timeless. So I'm looking forward to us reviewing it later in the year.
Yeah, I think it's around the autumn time. I think we've got that scheduled for, right?
Yes. So on that note, we will get into the final plugs and talk about next week and what we've got on. So first of all, thank you everyone for listening. If you enjoyed and you want to keep up with us on the socials, you can find us on Twitter at Screams Behind, Facebook and Instagram is Behind the Screams. Patreon is patreon.com/behindthescreams, and thank you to all of our Patreons. I don't have the list on me right now, but I just want to say we love and appreciate you. You keep our lights on, you keep our kitties fed.
Keep my rats alive.
Yeah. No, we really appreciate it because it helps us continue to make the podcast better and to grow it, and I think we appreciate it more than you know. You know, it's a massive passion project for all of us, and it helps us to make things better as we go along. Twitch.tv/behindthescreamspodcast. So it's Fridays, Mondays. It's
Mondays, Wednesdays, Saturdays and Sundays.
Oh, I got that completely wrong. I tried. But yeah, you can find us there on all the socials. Lindsay, where can people find you?
I'm at @HiItsLindsay_ on all social media.
And Ian?
You find me on Twitter at IanForrest12. You're not getting the rest of my social medias. They're for me.
They're exclusive.
I generally only post there at the weekends when Lindsay is just taking over the Twitter channel for the podcast. So generally, if you want to get hold of me, then just message the podcast socials. It's me that's usually behind there, unless it's a Saturday, and then it's Lindsay.
And you can also find us on TikTok as well at Behind the Screams. Keep an eye out there for all the content, all the trivia that Lindsay will be posting. You can find me, Lulu_Pew, on Twitter and Twitch. I stream Mondays, Fridays and Saturdays. And we'll get into next week. So this was obviously my choice for my first hosting of our International Women's Month. I think I've done okay, I hope. I was a bit nervous.
You've done a good job.
I know, it's better than me, you bitch.
I'll start taking over more, you know?
It's what you think.
Yeah, like that. But yeah, this was obviously my choice. But next week, we are going to Lindsay's first choice for the month of March. And your movie is The Perfection.
Yes.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's just... I don't know what to say. I chose it because I like it and that's it. But...
You know what the best part is? Lindsay's been fucking dying to get to this episode now for about 7 weeks since we first announced we were doing it. And she's like, I've picked this movie for specifically for this. I'm dying to speak about it. She's been fucking waiting for this moment.
I've been waiting for this moment since last summer when we did the underrated horrors. I'm just like, oh, I can't wait to do this film.
I can't believe that was that long ago, by the way.
Oh, God.
Can I just say, before that, before we get to next week's episode, this Sunday on the podcast as well, we will be releasing our first celebrity interview for International Women's Month, where the three of us chatted to the wonderful Emma Louise Webb, who has been on the podcast before, but she came back to talk to us specifically about women in horror and International Women's Day. And I think she had some really cool insights as well in terms of, you know, where we are, where we need to go, what we would like to see, and, you know, some cool stories about host and her experiences as well, and what she wants to do with her career.
Definitely. That was such a good interview. Obviously, you've spoken to Emma before, Ian, but it was mine and Lindsay's first time speaking to Emma. And I don't know if you want to say anything here, Lindsay, but I think I can speak for the both of us saying that Emma is so lovely. And that was, it was amazing to get the opportunity to chat with her.
I know, she's such a babe, she's so lovely, she's just like proper down to earth, just so easy to talk to.
And you know what? She's like the most talented person ever. Like, she's a good actress, she can speak Korean, she's like...
She's in a band, she's doing all the things.
She's got everything going for her, she's fucking gorgeous. Like, I'm so jealous, I kind of just want to be her at this point.
I think we all do, like, let's be honest.
Bitch has got everything.
Triple threat. We love Emma, we stan. But yeah, so next week we have The Perfection, and then after that we've got... I think it's Eden Lake, isn't it?
Eden Lake, Ian? After that, yes.
And then it's Teeth, so keep an eye out for that. that'll be a very different hosting experience for me, for sure.
I haven't seen this film, and the reactions you used to have every single time it's brought up, I'm just like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck am I going to watch?
I
don't know if I want to warn you about some of it.
You told me about someone screaming vagina.
There is that, but I feel like there should be a trigger.
After lockdown's over.
I don't know if I should maybe like trigger warn you about some of the things that are in this, because it's a deal. There's some shit that happens in this film.
But you also have us watching The Martyrs later in the year as well, so we'll need some warnings.
You sounded
for that.
Like an 80-year-old. The Martyrs, it's just Martyrs. I got it on the eBays, you know.
I'll push off. Being bullied now. I'm the youngest out of all of you as well, so we ain't shite.
Well, we can't help it. You sound like the oldest, don't we? Lucy's getting sassy. I don't like it. Quick, end this show.
On that note, thank you everyone for listening, and we will catch you next week on Behind the Screams.